Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, welcome back to another episode of Each of the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and I'm the host and producer of this show, coming to you on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Castbox, Podbean, Player FM, Radio Public, and iTunes. Thank you so much for joining us here today, and welcome back to the second half of Season 3. I am delighted to be back with you and sharing the voices of some fantastic poets from all around the world. Today we truly have an international show, from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland, over to America and back across to the United Kingdom. This weekend on Eat the Storms we have an Albatross and Icarus, cicadas and bond girls, sunsets at Fishbourne's, beginnings of okra, umber and malachite, unexpected script changes in Harry Potter settings, mothers and daughters and wildfires, along with the loss of the Maryland Eagles. So, what are we waiting for? Let's get bloody poetic! My first guest today on Eat the Storms is a writer from New York who currently lives in the Hudson Valley. He is inspired by that landscape, and his work has appeared in From Whispers to Roars, X-Ray Literary Magazine, Black Bough Poetry, Stodgy Magazine, and he currently has two chapbooks coming out. The first of which is now available to buy is called I Always Wanted to Be a Bond Girl, published by Daily Drunk Press, and coming soon but now available to pre-order is Cicada Song from Finishing Line Press. He was with us first in Season 1 when we had our very first LGBTQ plus Pride Poetry Party, and I am delighted to welcome him back. This is the fantastic Ryan Norman.
Hello everyone, and hello Damien. Thank you for having me back on your podcast. My name is Ryan Norman, and I'm a poet and writer, and I have two chapbooks coming out and available this year, but one is available, the other one is on pre-order. And I just wanted to read you some poems from that and maybe talk a little bit about them. And the first one that I'm going to read is from my chapbook Cicada Song, which is on pre-order now, and it's called Labyrinth. Waves crashed against his labyrinth, blowing back his hair as he stared into the angry sea, a welcome gray, white-capped, unable to corrode his hand-placed stone, mortared by memories cemented in time. The sea's wet breath whispered seductive secrets of escape, but to where? A drum beat in the distance, steadying his racing heart. A ship sailed the horizon, cheapening his plan of counting crests, breaking to sea debris against his fortification. The albatross circled above. He slinked into the shadows, afraid of what was to come. Horns trumpeted, cymbals crashed. Sounds of celebration drew him from his quarters. Curiosity killed the discreet. Spied by dark eyes, penetrating his fortress, reaching out a hand, he backed against the balustrade and leapt. Albatross free, falling. His labyrinth faded in the plummet. One drop in the ocean tossed and tumbled, spat out like sea trash, stung by a sandpaper tongue, bottled, no postage, returned to sender, into the arms of a stranger. You look freshly plucked, my goose-fleshed, fledgling Icarus. His limp body tossed over his shoulder, taken back inside as he looked back at the sea as it waved. And that was inspired by a a family trip I took to Lake Tahoe, and I was getting pictures, of course, because I have to, obviously. And well, I got too close to the ocean and someone called me Icarus. So that was the inspiration for that. And I want to read another one from a cicada song. This is called Baby Breath. I came into this world head first, blue faced, the voice choked out of me by the one thing giving me life. I've spoken of umbilical roots as a metaphor of a tree feeding souls into a dark cave as they transitioned into another life. But I've never spoken of my umbilical roots, the roots that stole my newborn voice, my baby breath. She should have known the care I would need, blew to this world with an umbilical noose, how I would cry and cry, twisted in emotions with no voice, forever entangled between fingers, purse strings, her voice, his voice. I cried until my breath stopped, blew again, blew always, tangled in the wires, crossing, sparking. I stood by her side, by his side, but I always hung upside down in my own life and learned to see things from the bottom. Around each corner, the torment of lassoed rope, the shadow of a noose, a reminder of my roots. No matter the successes, the connections, truth always leaked in my lungs until I stayed with him on a lake and it called me in. So I called her. The lasso had its hold, and I walked through sprinklers, wetting me so the slip was easy. How I would struggle to say, "Help me," as I waded back into the water, trying to breathe the fluid once again, under the moon. Her voice calling from the shore 1,000 miles away, our lines entangled as I sank into the glimmering darkness. That poem was a little bit darker, and definitely if you pick up the collection and have a read, you'll find different things. All about my life. And then I'm going to move on to my other chapbook, which is available now on Amazon, that you can purchase a physical copy or you can get a digital copy if that's what you would prefer. The book itself, the physical book, has two more poems in it that I added. I don't know, it's feeling a little wild, I suppose. But this is the title poem from my chapbook, I Always Wanted to Be a Bond Girl. And it's called I Always Want to Be a Bond Girl. My head breaks waves, but the water rolls under itself, curls into the sand like tiny fists that beat up my chest, pounding pearls of light. That water drip, crystalline shatter spilling down my torso. Am I a Bond girl now? My hips check the surf. Foam crawls up my back. I run my hand through my hair and the sun flares your lens. Is this slow motion for you too? The sea grabs my waist. Are you still watching? That really was inspired by. Oh, I don't remember what James Bond movie that was, and that's what this chapbook is all about. But it had Halle Berry in it, and there's just a scene of her coming out of the water. And then I will read this final poem from I Always Wanted to Be a Bond Girl, and it's called Quiver. I dance to dodge a barrage of bourbon-forged salvos, expertly aimed. Every syllable a direct hit, bloodying emotions, soft tissue damaged, scarring over itself, forming keloids. My self-worth expertly flayed by your saber tongue. Yet I cradle your head, coo you calm into peaceful slumber. Your eyes, amnesia blue, guide you to fetch me tea at sunrise. I hide my cheeks, tear-stained, to save you from your truth. Down for days counting arrows, questioning why love is so sharp. You flash your bright white incisors. My flesh quivers, so you pull me close. And with this poem, it was really about just creating this environment that is more dangerous, I suppose, in all the ways that there are danger between two people. And I don't know, it's one of my favorites in the collection. All right, well, I would like to thank you for listening, and don't forget to pre-order Cicada Song. And bye, I always wanted to be a Bond girl. Thank you very much. Thank you to Damien for having me. Goodbye.
Next up on the show today, we are heading over to West Yorkshire in England, although this poet has a background here in Northern Ireland. Her first collection, The Impact of Limited Time, was published by Indigo Dreams in 2020, and since then everyone has been talking about it, but today we're about to hear why. She has recently had poems published in The Honest Ulsterman, The Wry Alto, and Ink, Sweat and Tears. With an MA in Creative Writing and a recent Creative Future Award, which she won in 2019, this is the psychiatric nurse, animal rescuer, and occasional house cleaner called Kitty Donnelly.
Hi, my name's Kitty Donnelly. Thank you for having me on your wonderful podcast. I only just discovered it recently, but it's got me through many rainy dog walks and long drives through the Yorkshire traffic. Going to be reading some poems from my first collection, The Impact of Limited Time, and then a couple of new ones. The first poem I'm going to read is about the experience of living with somebody who's terminally ill and how it changes things and affects your perceptions and your senses. It's called Between the Worlds. The sky looked as it's never looked again. On the tips of our tongues, revelations. All day, the giddy colours of a dream, then the lucidity of darkness. A sunset infused with such terminal red, it shocked the whole harbour at Fishbourne. Heightened senses, discarded reticence. These were our compensations. The next poem I'm going to read was written for my daughter, Evie, and it's called Cave Painting. Pass me the horsehair brush steeped in colours of earth. I will paint you our beginnings. In sleep you flee from leopards, bison, wolves. Harness their dream spirits. Tame them on the walls and you'll rest fearless. Your loss is charcoal black. Your anger a quiver of hematite arrows. The calcite white of your silence a curtain between us. Daughter, we can't linger in this cave light. Time's a virus plundering our settlements. We must immortalize our hands in ochre, umber, malachite. The third poem is based on some of the experiences that have been passed down to me from my family, who are from Newry in Northern Ireland. And it's called Border Town. Fistfuls of nights, you watch them burn. Sean, Aidan, Seamus. You try but cannot break the glass of dream to save them. Wake imprinted by their fingers grasping for purchase. Then another lad from class, his grin a premature flash of teeth as his greetings torn from his tongue. This a Tuesday, a British town. You fled. I was born to peace, a leafy street. What you couldn't comprehend, the tap, tap, tap of the typewriter told. I sat on the bottom step and listened. The comfort of your jumper turning cold when you spoke a name aloud, every syllable sharp, the way you'd enunciate names of the murdered. This poem is called Animals in the Same Cage. We twitch like rabbits caught in the rungs of nightmare. Your damp hand heavy on my thigh, where scars glow lunar white in childhood's glare. Often you leap to your feet, eager in sleep to fight the one who soldered bars, who blocked those natural runs you would have followed, as I wake again to the click of the lock and absence hardening shadows. Anyone who's been under that damp, eerie tunnel under the Thames might recognise this next poem. This is Greenwich Foot Tunnel. For his coffin, he chose the irises his mother brought him in a dream. I'm thinking of him now as I descend at Cutty Sark to River Cold, Water Weight. I'm thinking this is how it might have been, dying. Being torn from the day to walk beneath dripping cast iron, leaving food stalls, faces, reams and reams of photographs, attempting to shout stop, I need those, echoing, knowing a word is happening that won't find the tip of your tongue, light spreading like untrodden snow, relief, then letting go. This one's from my new collection and it's called The Goldfinch. It died quietly on my palm, externally unruffled, its body just beyond a living warmth. I fought the dual tragedy and privilege of holding it, unsure at first which bird it was on the turn of becoming. A jag of lemon lightning across each wing. Red masked, I recalled the Fabricius painting, wall fixed perch, chain clasped like an iron rosary to a clawfoot saw from the wing's insistent rising. The expression marked by an uptilt of the chin was like a child suppressing with pride their furious griefs. And the final poem I've got to read is about a really dark time. I think it's self-explanatory. It's called High. An Arctic tern will fly 10,000 miles to flourish in two summers' worth of light. So I was high after he died, chasing sun on the wing, though directionless. I swallowed 3 green capsules every night, peristalsis pulsing them through my scorched esophagus. I took what I could get to alter consciousness, testing my fragmented sense of time against the wall clock's competence till dawn was salmon red and gutted on the banks of the horizon. I was not, or even near, myself.
Joining us now on Eat the Storms, we have the returning guests, Champion Things, who were with us on the last episode when I shared 3 of the latest tracks from their new album called Deep Within the Slum Kitchen. They are based in Northern Ireland and comprise of Gordon Hewitt and Wallace Gibson, along with guests Vic Bronzini-Fulton and Michael McKinney. They are a groove-based group with music overlaid with songs, spoken word, and are accompanied by a floating lineup of musicians. You can find them on Twitter, Facebook, and of course on Bandcamp, but meanwhile, for now, sit back and enjoy the excellent musical stylings of Champion Things.
The residents insisted that this was and would continue to be a sleepy seaside town. As international media representatives, the Swami's guests, Modi supporters, booked hotel room after hotel room. And it was necessary to consecrate every available space prior to the guests' arrival and then again each morning. But this process could only be achieved by negotiating a payment with the Swami of Wee Cumbrae. Crowds would gather on Largs Beach, bare feet quickly replaced with walking boots to accommodate the stony ground. And then binoculars, spyglasses, homemade ocular vehicles, every eye trained on the barefooted and bare-chested Baba, climbing into stainless steel vans. Now he had already discussed with his followers that their feet should be unclean, transferring earthly goodness into the berries. And then it was suggested later that bathing in general was unnecessary, that the earth should be allowed to transfer its healing qualities. And on the plastic bottle, the claim was strident. We can cure viral infections, desultory conditions, and this caused much mirth in the local bars, homosexuality. Also managed to infiltrate royal families and government agencies due to their perceived shamanic capacities. But as long as he spends his money here, suggested the mayor, we can live with his proclivities, uttering this despite the pregnancy of the daughters of the local dignitaries. Thank you. despite being considered part of the vulnerable age bracket. His commitment to probiotic diets, vitamin supplements, and relentless and rigorous exercise he assumed would form a sufficient shield. And therefore, unlike so many of his friends who succumbed to the viral onslaught, he thought it unlikely that he would yield to penetration. Regardless, he was bedridden for a month, enduring high temperatures, hallucinations, nosebleeds, jackhammer headaches, the rasp of the cough was relentless. Even recovery brought with it an unexpected fatigue. But once navigated, an invigoration and enthusiasm he thought eliminated returned. Committed to reading epidemiological journals, partly to combat the arguments of his youthful flatmates. He would indulge in lengthy discussions about the Great Barrington Declaration and the utility or idiocy of the herd immunity strategy. But there were stranger things emerging as lockdown ended, travel restrictions lifted, and air corridors re-established. His children to return home to visit their mother's graveside, not realizing that the relationship had not survived dementia or the restrictions. And after a few months, he decided to let that side of things lie and return to climbing hills and mountains despite his aging joints begging for mercy.
My next guest on the show today is no stranger to any aspiring poet, as he is not only the creator of the fantastic Poets Directory, that's www.poetsdirectory.co.uk, which is the one-stop shop for all you need to know about poetry, call-outs, submissions and interviews, but he is now also the creator of the fantastic Nine Pens Press. And just a few weeks ago, we had two of his published poets, Michael Connolly and Julie Igarai, as guests on the show. But back to this guest, who is a very recognised and celebrated poet in his own right, and his own pamphlet, Impermanence, was published in 2020 by Maytree Press. Joining us from the North Pennines, where he's finishing a PhD on the eco-poetics of Robert Frost, let me hand you over to the always brilliant Colin Bancroft.
Hi, my name's Colin Bancroft. I am the editor at Nine Pens Press, and I run the Poets Directory. I had a pamphlet published with Maytree Press in 2021, and a couple with Broken Sleep, Kayfabe, which is some wrestling poems, and another pamphlet that's going to be coming out next year in 2022, called Knife Edge, which is a poem which documents an incident where I was stabbed around about 10 years ago. But today, the poems I'm going to read are from Impermanence, which was released with Maytree Press last year, last October. Just want to say before I start, thanks very much for having me today. Really, really looking forward to sharing my work and some insight into my poems with you. So the first poem I will share is called Tethered. Tethered's an important poem for myself because it was written about miscarriage and kind of the effects of that on my relationship. It won the 2016 Poets and Players Prize, which was also the first and pretty much only prize that I've entered and won So it's kind of got a bit of a special place in my heart for that as well. So this is Tethered. All I could think about when you told me that we had lost it was that night we spent camping in Braemar and the wind funnelling down the channel between the hills at such a rate that it bent the tent poles and pushed the fabric almost into our faces, as though there were great pressure being applied on the outside and the whole of the world was sitting on our refuge, crushing it down. That crush has come again, though different now in the silence of the stairs. And the rain is now your sobs, and the wind the startled breaths you take on my shoulder. That night I thought we might pull away. I could feel the guy ropes burying themselves deeper, holding on for dear life, knowing that if they weren't tethered in the ground, that they could end up anywhere. That tugging is you holding onto my shirt, pulling it tightly in your stooped sadness, holding you up. As though without a firm grip, you might take off and end up somewhere beyond that valley, that field, and these stairs. So Impermanence, as the title suggests, is a collection about loss and about dealing with different types of loss and coming to terms, I guess, with the knowledge that we are impermanent as people and everything that we do is, you know, in the end going to be rolled away. So it's trying to capture that and capture those moments within poetry and trying to come to terms, I guess, with that idea. So the second poem I'll read is called Mise en Scene. Again, this is a poem regarding miscarriage and loss. And it centres around a trip to Harry Potter studio tours near Watford. Mise en scene. She was a few weeks gone when we arrived for the studio tour. We milled outside, waiting in expectation for our time as she snapped shots of the Ford Anglia dangling from the ceiling. Slowly the line moved. We shuffled around the barriers like ghosts chasing Pac-Man. Excitement fizzed in the chatter and laughter of fans waiting to enter the magical world of their childhood. Yet their anticipation was nothing to my silent, new-created thrum as I imagined a childhood yet to come and all the scenes that we would get to film in the coming years. As we walked around, I thought of all the props, the sights, the sounds and all the extras that would populate our set. The cot, the pram, the bike, the toys, the pets and all the untold stories that would unfold around us and the protagonist that was being fleshed out inside her. 3 days later, there was a change to the script and we were left with our plot lines torn, a blank screen and our storyboards undrawn. Impermanence deals with, as I said, different kinds of loss, not just personal, but also kind of universal, and looks at the way that the natural world changes with seasons. And how that kind of is a representation in a way of how we change and the losses and that we go through. So this is Fallen. It has been a skeleton in the hedge for a while. No leaves this spring, just its bare bones, starkly white against the dark foliage of the hawthorn and beech. Now it's there, fallen in the garden, wind-wrecked, spread wide like the filigree of a shattered crown. We have become as reverent as for our own dead, and we let it lie for days in state upon its ground, touching the earth at last where its shadow once reached. And we will learn to wait in the long days of summer to come for other things to move in to fill the breach of its absence, like nettles, foxgloves, and the sun. So the next poem I'm going to read is called The Fog, and this is a poem about my grandma who passed away about 15 years ago now. And as a kid, we always used to go around her house and watch old movies and do all the kind of, you know, things that you look back with nostalgia when you get a bit older that you wish you could go back and do again. And we always enjoyed The Fog by John Carpenter. That was our favourite film. So The Fog. You had the film on VHS and we watched it more times than I can remember. Me, a kid, hiding underneath your coat as the undead broke into the lighthouse to catch the girl, and you groaning loudly from somewhere at the back of the darkened living room, pretending to be Captain Blake resurrected. That night when we walked over to the chip shop, across the rugby field, and we found ourselves shrouded by rising mist was an opportunity that we couldn't miss. You banging on the living room window, scaring Vicky half to death, and me laughing so hard that I cried. I can't tell you how many nights I've stood since then, looking out into the fog, watching the shadows flit, deepen, disperse, hoping beyond hope that you would reform before me, to scare me out of these reveries, to be something more substantial than a ghost. And the final poem I'm going to read is one which kind of gets us to just look at accepting our place in the world and dealing with these losses, because there's nothing else we can do really apart from, you know, carry on. So this is Roadkill. It shot out of the verge too quickly for me to see. A rabbit perhaps, or a stoat, something that panic had gripped by the throat and flung across the road. My foot hovered over the brake, but it was underneath the wheels before I had chance to react. I felt the bump and the car seemed to shudder, almost as if it was aware of the fact that everything there was irretrievably gone, and all it could do was move on. So thanks very much for having me. I hope you enjoyed those poems. And thank you for having me on the podcast. Good luck with all your writing.
My next guest on Eat the Storms today is from County Down in Northern Ireland and is the author of 9 collections of poetry, including Snakeskin Stilettos, Beneath the Ice, The Horse's Nest, Miracle Fruit, Carnivorous, and her latest collection, Bonehouse, from Dira Press, which just came out this year. The recipient of many poetry awards, including a Major Artist Award from the Arts Council of Northern Ireland, I am delighted to welcome to the podcast the incredible Moira Donaldson.
Hi there, my name is Moira Donaldson and I'm a poet who lives in County Down in Northern Ireland. I'd like to read you some poems from my latest collection, which is called Bonehouse, and it was published by Dura Press in the spring of this year. Inside the collection there are 4 poems, also all called Bonehouse. They're kind of, I suppose, the spine on which the rest of the book hangs. So I'd like to read you the first of these Bonehouse poems. Skin a cat more ways than that. Rat-a-tat-tat. Open the door and see who's there, I dare you. Father becomes dust. Father who carried fire, heat to the hearth. Mother gets no rest, parading through the night, eternal like the moon. Of all the impossible things, the worst is her sadness. Haunted because not humbled. Sit beneath the weight of days until you become stone, fossil. What was this? Did this once live? It was not their lives that mattered, it was their lives that mattered. It's little things, like the electric candles screwed onto the piano. Here's the moon again in the aftermath, with the rain falling and only a small stone in my hand. All that fear and hope and pleading, all that needing to be saved. A son's a son till he gets a wife, a daughter's a daughter all of her life. Under the moon, my mother. And the next poem I would like to read is called A Sudden Shaft of Light. My demented mother, who doesn't know me anymore, looks up as I come into the room. Ach, there's my wee darling Moira, she says, such love in her voice that everything falls away but love. The slate is clean, and I new born again and perfect, know myself, beloved daughter, before the darkness closes in again. This next poem is called Wildfire. It's all mixed up in my head, burning behind my eyes, burning trees, animals, a woman wrapping a dying koala in her white shirt, lungs of the world burning. The burning monk. I still have the photo, black and white, cut from a newspaper. He burned like a candle, never moved a muscle. A naked girl running, burning, her outstretched arms, her anguished face. Lungs taken out, a gift of lungs put in. Miraculous, brutal. First breath she took, same air I breathe, her last breath. Our lungs, my lungs, lungs of the world, sparks in the air. Not as if we weren't warned. Ballywhiskin Beach. How wide the beach, how high the cliffs, the teeming sea, little flatfish, pipefish, rocklings, mermaid's purse, kelp and bladderwrack drawn aside to reveal a sideways scuttle of crabs, rock pools where sea anemones flower and periwinkles are jeweled currency, gathering dulse to dry and eat, salt, the dawning light, my father singing, the shrimp boats are a-coming, my softly mother, tartan picnic rug, sun skin, castles made of sand, moats filled by buckets carried from the tide, the length of days, calm rolling deep of night, tenor G for Mew Island foghorn, sounding like the voice of the sea in the dreaming dark. It seemed I closed my eyes and dreamed a life, or else where did it go, the time? Tonight I see how the beach is narrow, the cliffs are merely rocks, no height at all. The child is memory, mother and father too, all disappeared beneath the tide of years. All now is remembering. I close my eyes again. How high the cliffs, how wide the beach. And the last poem I'd like to read, I just dedicate it to my gorgeous granddaughter, who will be 2 in about a week, 10 days' time. And this is from before she was born, but when we knew that she was on the way. And it's called First Glimpse of Orcas in Faxaflow Bay. We've stood on deck for hours until we're nearly frozen, nearly given up. Our small family, husband, wife, our 2 grown girls, and our granddaughter swimming in her own warm amniotic ocean. Then a shout goes out. My body begins to tremble. In the very crest, the blessing of their movement upwards, in the curve of their black bodies, hung for one moment against the white ice space between sea and sky, I am lifted on their backs into a fierce new longing. Thank you.
Next up on the show today, I'm going to read a few poems from another fantastic poet and also a supporter of the arts, as he is the editor of Fevers of the Mind Press, which I will tell you more about after I share his poems. He is the author of the poetry books New Disease Streets, The Cartoon Diaries, Taking Pictures in the Dark, and Last Reflections, all of which and more are available on Amazon. He has been widely published by Iceflow Press, Truly You, Dark Morrow, Anti-Heroine Chic, to name but a few, and in 2021 was nominated for Best of the Net. His upcoming collection will be a best of, which will be out soon, called Last Poetic Whispers. This is the poetry of David L. Onan. This first poem by David L. Onan is called The Bell Chimes Three Times. When the bell chimes three times and the band stops playing funeral tunes, there's a burning running through the veins when the whistles penetrate through the trackless strains. There is no polish to the clanging. There are dark nights under stars singing, the curves of my brain still stinging, looking at the paths of sunsets reflecting over our bleeding. The bell chimes three times, watching the ugly and the beautiful break, walking emotionless down lonely dead flower valleys, emotions just deadened, awakened. Just to find the ornaments of bones banging. The bell chimes three times for the chains of forbidden fruits washing away in the heart of our drink. The chills on this brightened night leaves me falling in the broken ocean. Pull my body out of this drowning and pull the plug from the flaking moon. Washing the green from my eyes, turning to brick grey. The bell chimes three times. You're still stuck on the second chime, while the city displays us to be vulgar and taboo. You're watching all the legs and your forehead is all sweaty. You're saddened by temptations and you leak insecurities. The bell doesn't bite for flesh and your fevered swims that lead to only powdered ashes. The bell chimes three times. A new morning kicks the highway's dirt into the sun's breath. Winding in the wind that beat the hills into dusty coffins. Feel all those nervous blades leaving your stomach. 1,000 minutes wrapped into one. Lost in the square without a compass, tripping our cords, still attached and wanting. Wanting a sense of belonging during all this needing reality. You live for the women and the sugar. The bell chimes three times. I'm thinking of a new sky. I've been hearing that there's a rumbling in the beast's eye. I feel the nerves eating through this bone like steel, remembering all the alarms and disease. The bells convulsing, the foghorns stitching. I want to be home, sleeping over the gun. I want to bag the buttons of the sun. You want to be home, sleeping over the gun. You want to bag the buttons of the sun, to leave a little light inside to begin threading in. The bell chimes three times. Crashing through quiet beams, the church floats on the water, the blood, the Bibles and the babies of war. The battle of the Adam and Eve shores. We've been drunk in the belching deserts. And the bell? The bell, she chimes three times. This second poem by David L. Onan is called By the Almond Tree.
by the almond tree, there lays a skull under leaves. Under many brown almonds, decayed in taste, rain-withered leaves milked in chipped stones like chipped fingernails, scattered by the wind. The bleeding wings in love with the heat of this sidewalk that cooks the dinner, that severs the wedding bells. The almonds mush, but hard like bone, broken bones wave in the spinning glass from the impact of a car wreck or weather. Feel the snow's breath nearby. By confused thunderhead, create the flakes from God's palm over the wires of sticks, bent like arms at a 90-degree angle, to sprinkle little wet blankets over almonds forgetting our soldier's burial or fallen that breathes out the last loves when the stars this morphia ripped the sky. Like millions of popped balloons, the flags wave in. The sounds of the funeral, the electricity dimming from our falling feet. Leaves are fire to puddles of water. Puddles of water for dirty almonds to sprout new life when picked up by infant hands and given to a new universe or Jesus returning from impermanence to reshape the bones back to mechanical grenades that walk, that run, that live. New bleeding hearts cocked out of sunshine, birthed in heaven, to feed the giants under the almond tree. The world is nude in red wash, the blue, behind the flowing curtains of cosmos, watch the cities become countryside. And watch humanity float off on those infertile grounds.
The always brilliant Fevers of the Mind Press are currently open for submissions. At the moment, they're taking subs for Fevers of the Mind Anthology, Fevers 5, Fevers of the Mind Issue 6, as well as the follow-up to the Anthology of Avalanches in Poetry, Writings and Art inspired by Leonard Cohen. And this submission period closes on the 1st of September. You can find Fevers of the Mind Press at www.feversofthemind.com, where is shared an incredible wealth of new poems, poems from their anthologies, and right now you can find their new hit interview series Quick Nine, which gives the same questions to various writers, a fascinating series exploring what inspires and influences writers, why they write, and who they read. So, feversofthemind.com, let your fingers do the walking for your poetic fix, to be inspired, to be motivated, and also, right now, to be included in this fantastic press. For my last guest on the show today, we are heading across the ocean to the United States, and a middle grade English teacher and the founder and director of the Salisbury Poetry Week. She is the president of the non-profit Eastern Shore Writers Association and the co-chair of the annual Bay to Ocean Writers Conference.
Her poetry has appeared in many journals, including TAOS Journal of International Poetry and Art and the American Journal of Poetry. Please sit back and relax in the excellent company of Tara A. Elliott.
Hi, I'm Tara Elliott. Thank you for having me on Eat the Storms. My first poem is called Blue. I grew up along the eastern shore of Maryland, one of the last completely wild places in the countryside here in America. This poem is all about the death of many, many bald eagles that were dying along the eastern shore in 2018. Blue. All winter, birds of prey have sailed through this landscape, dark wings coasting along wild currents. Scouring the fields, they seek the small and the moving among the dead. This time last year, a farmer found 13 bald eagles on his farm, all dead, wings splayed like the criminals the Romans once crucified. NPR tells me the ancients had no word for it, the color blue. Except for the sky, they found so little of it in their natural world that even Homer spoke of the sea as wine dark. Last night's rain has churned the narrows a muddied brown, and this morning the Chesapeake unhinges like an oyster. Here wave crests upon wave. Here wind is little more than gust without a bird in sight, not even a black-tipped gull. I edge into the great steel cage that separates east from west, shore from shore, country from city. Once more, I attempt to bridge this distance. Scientists say until we have a way to describe something, we may not even be aware of it. I recently read the eagles bore no obvious signs of trauma, as if one day, tired of flying, they simply slipped on the sky and fell. As teenagers, my friends and I would often make pilgrimages to St. Paul's Churchyard in Chestertown, where the silent screen actress Tallulah Bankhead is buried. This poem, which is a true story, is called St. Paul's Churchyard. I thought I told you to wait in the car, Tallulah Bankhead. Did you curse us that day when we, just 16, carried tiger lilies across that stretch of lawn to place along your ground-flush tomb? And you, more silent than any of your early pictures, said nothing. What did we want of a used-up actress dead and gone by more than 20 years? What did we hope would ghost from your grave? Secrets of Hollywood, tales of lovers you seduced by framing yourself in bathrobes and high-heeled mules, your on-screen lipstick blacker than any ink, cigarette smoke leaking from the front of your mouth and constant French inhale, and how you never once wore panties, even when climbing or turning cartwheels. Oh, Dutch, we needed to know how you lost even the bit parts to those better than you. How you'd put your lips together and blow every damned role to which you were destined, every handsome man who ever dared love you. And how the cabana boys and casting directors would part your jazz garters to fill you with intent. And why you never returned to the South with your nose clean, darling. Champagne and bourbon dripping off your tongue like honey from the local hives. Oh, Tallulah, your very name spoke fame. Something we knew we'd never have. Of which, like the babies, the studio made you abort. You never were delivered. Addicted to your mixed drink of infamy and tragedy, we scouted for your grave, so entirely plain it would take hours for us to find. No wonder we would return to the car to find the window shattered, safety glass glinting in the sunlight, beaded and blue, like one of those gowns men would so often slip from your marble shoulders. As a writer, connections have always fascinated me. This poem is called Valentine. In Catholic school, a nun taught me about the saint, how he wrote letters while imprisoned. Stripping leaves from a tree outside his cell, he scratched coded messages with a stick through chlorophyll and slipped heart-shaped notes through the bars of his window to flutter to his lover below. Later, I was taught he was sainted for marrying couples against emperor's orders. Unmarried soldiers would not run from battle. I recently read that the first known drawing of the human heart was two of the organs stitched together. Buried at the Church of St. Valentine, Da Vinci understood the heart beyond its shape, slicing through flesh until he grasped how each of the chambers worked in unison to pump blood through body. He was the first to document the pulse as it thrummed beneath the delicate skin of the wrist. Da Vinci drew his findings from the movements of rivers, surmising all water must eventually return to source. Stealing into crypts and dissecting in the winter so the bodies would not fall apart, he recognized the heart as muscle, not warming the blood as previously thought, but instead squeezing to create currents, the flow filling the organ until it would wring itself out. Valves he analyzed through a model he made of glass, grass seed and water flooding the chambers until an eddy forced them shut. He observed rotational movement, its cone-like shape, the complexity of its twisting, and in its failure, he recognized that twist lost. In his journals, he concluded that the heart feeds itself. Da Vinci's findings were never published in his lifetime. The drawing of two hearts fused was nothing more than an urban myth. St. Valentine was beheaded on February 14th. I miss the heart shape of your mouth. Weaving nature into my work is really, really crucial and important to my poetry. This is called Honeysuckle. Petals softer than skin, cup nectar deep, and wait for the precise moment the tongue tip touches the smallest of drops. I will inch along wooden fences, climb over the tops of these trees, even across the shale. Rooted here in coolest shade, I want you the way honeysuckle craves the sun.
We are now coming to the end of today's show, and so I'd like to leave you with two poems before we go. The first poem is called Shades of Blue, and it comes from my debut poetry pamphlet, Eat the Storms, which was published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press in September of last year, now on its way to its first birthday. This poem is about adoption and the whispers and connections it brings up sometimes long after. The first poem that I'm going to leave you with is also about connections. It's called I Give You Fair Warning Up There in Lights, and it was triggered when I heard of Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. And of course, whenever I think of New York City, I'm very strangely triggered into thinking about Winnie the Pooh and Tigger and Piglet, who are now at home in the New York Public Library behind a glass case. So this is I Give You Fair Warning Up There in Lights. Whenever I hear the mention of Mount Sinai, I think of desert dust singing in the memory of water and not tourist-filled taxis burning fares of emergencies across a park. Whenever I think of Winnie and Tigger and Piglet too, I'm never near a fence or robin or honeyed hands. Instead, I'm stuck to thoughts of stuffed toys contemplating reflections in glass cases behind the books they've made into their beds, in the library, in the Schwarzman on Fifth. Whenever I hear a whistle, I'm not benched at the ball game, bluffing understanding and digging undersoul spikes into earth to find connections to something other than soccer. No. Whenever I bring my lips together to catch a cab, to carry me over to considerations on how to hold a stuffed bear behind the glass reflection he's grown tired of, it's no halting whisper, slipping from mouth that comes to mind, but the soft lie of your kiss that took me there, to the blinding avenues on the other side of understandings the mind makes of meanders, when I consider one thing and am confronted by the other. The first time, I fell over everything because my eyes kept looking up. Since then, I am more cautious of all the things at my own level that can topple me. I hear you calling in shades of blue. From the extremities of a distance my arms' reach can never cover. I hear you calling in shades of blue. Your concern comes in currents across the continents. In these cold corners when I question creation and my position within it. I hear you calling in shades of blue, only one born to know no origins can truly discern. In these days that demand ties that have not been well fettered.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, we've reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. I have been your host and producer, Damien B. Donnelly, and I'd like to end today's show by saying a huge thank you to my fantastic guests, Ryan Norman, Kitty Donnelly, Colin Bancroft, Moira Donaldson, David L. O'Nan, Tara Elliot, and the fantastic Champion Things. For details on all of my guests on today's show and for all the guests on every episode, please head on over to www.eatthestorms.com, click on the podcast section, and there you will find a listing for every episode. This is episode 7, season 3. As I said at the beginning of today's show, it is a pleasure to be back with you again, and we have a wonderful lineup of poets for the second half of season 3, with a few positions left. So if you are a poet, or if you know a poet who should be on the show sharing his, her, or their poetry, then please drop me an email at eatthestorms@yahoo.com. Just before I leave you today, I'd like to let you know that on the 17th of September, Eat the Storms, my debut poetry pamphlet published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press, turns 1 year old. To celebrate this, I will be having an online birthday party called Eating the Storms, an ensemble, an evening of poetry, prose and friends. Free tickets are now available via Eventbrite, and this will be a Zoom online show from 7:30 until 9:30, that is on the 17th of September. So hopefully see you there to continue this journey together.
Okay, that's it from me. All that remains for me is to say thank you so much for joining us here. Stay safe, stay well. Catch whatever rays of sunshine you can before the summer disappears and we have to hang up the Christmas lights on the snow-tipped trees. And of course, as always, we cannot end a single show without those three special words. So from me to you out there, stay bloody poetic!